think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Greetings, friends, and welcome to another episode of the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast, wherein each episode we drop a landing pod in our roguelike game, kill all the innocent flora and fauna by ranking it, and revisit those rankings at the end of our podcast season. I am your gun-handed captain of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my fellow cyborg survivor co-hosts.
This is the hunter, Will Wright.
And the teleporting imp man, Colin.
And Andrew is muted.
The muted one.
I'm just a cutesy monster design that you swear you've seen a million times before, despite having never played Risk of Rain. It's I, Andrew Harshman.
And this episode, we are closing out our second season of podcasting by returning to Petrichor 5 with Risk of Rain 2. Released early access March 28th, 2019, 1.0'd August 11th, 2020. And this is another kind of find it anywhere game, PC, PlayStation, Xbox. I'm actually kind of surprised you can find it on the Switch, actually. Maybe not after the late game, if your Switch blows up. But this was a effort by developer Hopu Games, who released our previous episode, Risk of Rain 1, 2013. And a remaster of Risk of Rain 1, Risk of Rain Returns, published in 2023, and Risk of Rain 2 is published by Gearbox since 2024, who have since taken over the reins of the IP, because Hopu Games is no more. They have dissolved, which we'll probably get into, but Gearbox, I guess, now effectively owns the game and the IP and everything associated with it from this year, the year of our Lord 2024 going forward. Risk of Rain 2 comes in on our data set as the number 3 most popular roguelike game on Steam with 295,726 total reviews.
And
according to the data that I've pulled, Your average player of Risk of Rain 2 has about 221 hours of gameplay in it.
Now,
granted, this game has been out for years and years, so I don't think there's an expectation for us to put 200 hours of gameplay in over 2 weeks. But Andrew, you've picked up the lore entry for the final boss of this season named Risk of Rain 2. What is the one sentence description inside that lore entry?
Well, there's so much to say. So much to say, in fact, that I know I'll be leaving some important things out. But here we have a game that has been really, really impressive, a long time coming, a lot would say. A game that has taken the original's atmosphere and vibe and ethos and updated it with new graphics and taken it into a new age of fidelity.
Third
and
dimension.
Stalker 2 is really just an incredible thousand pardons. Risk of Rain 2, right. I'm mixing up my sequels here. And I unfortunately didn't get to play quite as much of Risk of Rain 2 as I wanted because I had been distracted. But Risk of Rain 2 is a third-person shooter in which you are dropped into a series of levels with randomized elements to keep the gameplay fresh, and you are shooting and blasting and jumping and leaping and exploring and, above all, collecting items, meaningful gameplay-affecting items, and building an arsenal to help you on your way as you battle the elements, if you forgive the pun, and attempt to make your way to the ultimate boss battle, which sadly I did not complete. But yeah, it's a third person kind of looter shooter, but a little more arcadey than that, if you will.
Yeah, I think I was kind of watching carefully this year to see if whether or not if we would cover this earlier this year, just because I wasn't sure if this game would still be around at some point. Because I thought, well, like, oh my gosh, like, it's such a I'm astounded at how popular it is, because Risk of Rain 1, I never really thought was really that super popular. I think it's still in, like, I don't know, the top 25 or top 50 for roguelike games on Steam. But this is like one of the top games on Steam, period, which is freakishly popular. I don't know if it had to do with like buying a 4-pack or whatever early on in early access, but boy, that Gearbox acquisition really kind of made me nervous for a little bit. So I thought, well,
as it should.
May as well cover it for the last one before Gearbox inevitably dismantles it somehow. Because this game was like super highly rated, and then the Risk of Rain 2 Seekers of the Storm DLC came out this year, August 27th, 2024. Mostly negative review score on Steam, and I think, like, to be fair, I think the game that we have experienced and played was pretty bug-free, did not have any kind of, like, game-breaking things of, like, just immediately crashing or anything. Very stable as far as I could tell. And I played a lot of Risk of Rain 2 before that DLC and everything. But, like, that was the DLC where Gearbox decided, okay, we're going to take all this Unity code and merge it between the PC and console codes, which caused, as you could expect, a lot of problems. and for a while, like, the game, like, imagine something like RimWorld or Factorio from, like, their titanic position in, like, the Steam review ecosystem, like, top dogs going to, like, mixed or, like, you know, slightly negative territory as a result of it. It was that big of a deal. So, to Gearbox's credit, they did dig themselves out of the hole.
How long did that digging take?
I think, like, at least a month, maybe two.
Well, that's that's pretty impressive, I suppose. But, like, what a colossal blunder. Is that the chess term? I guess a blunder is, like, one specific, like, mistake that is over relatively quick. I don't know.
It's distinctly different than a mistake. So, but
a big oopsie Gearbox did, which, as far as I'm concerned, I have very little love for Gearbox over there. Having brutalized one of my favorite franchises, the Alien franchise.
Hmm.
I don't know. I've not played any of their games for well over a decade at this point. So this is my first Gearbox game in like 10 years. And yeah, you're right. It was bug free, but, gosh, imagine how frustrating it would be to be, in stage four, find the mega chest and then have your game crash or hit some kind of soft lock or.
Well, the true victory was the friends you made along the way. And the prisoners that you helped escape from the Rain World, right?
Yes, right. This is true.
And the robots that you forced into servitude.
You fixed them and they were grateful to you.
Interesting. Interesting perspective.
But yeah, so this, I mean, it is fundamentally a very similar game to the first game. You're running around, you're finding, you're beating enemies, beating monsters or whatever they are, robots. Demons, imps, a lot of imps, lizard men, etc., to collect money, to open chests, to get upgrades and to become OP. With the major difference between the first and second game is this one is in the third dimension as well.
Whoa.
Which I do feel like is a bold, like, that's a pretty big move to make between your first and your second game. Like, almost the point where I would say that this is in the Risk of Rain universe, but it's not. It is one of the few games where I would say that it's not the spiritual successor to the first game. Like, it feels like it's a different game in the way that you play it.
Like, yeah, what do we call that? It's not a spiritual successor, because a spiritual successor, I mean, has to be like the same genre, but this is a side scroller to a first person shooter. Interesting. A rebranding, a reboot almost.
Darkest Dungeon. I mean, I feel like part of the big, you get the atmosphere the same, but part of the big feel of the first game was like your character sprite is tiny.
What, like 4 pixels
you're in just
high?
An absolutely gigantic world running around, and like you can, that's definitely not the perspective that you get in this one. But you get that third D.
You get that third D. They do. I feel like it's difficult to capture that scale from the first game, where you are just so teeny tiny on a huge world. The environments in Risk of Rain 2 are quite cyclopean. They are quite massive. So to some extent, I feel like it captures that, but obviously not perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Z-axis change too. It's not you're running on a flat surface, so it's very similar to the first in that sense, where you have little jump pads, you're flying up into the air, and you're moving around constantly in every single dimension. But is that really, does that make a game fun?
Yeah, you know, I will say,
third dimension make a game fun?
Does it make it more fun?
I think in this case, yes, it does, because there are a lot of melee characters, I think, specifically in Risk of Rain 1, that felt like, I don't know. And then in 3D, in this environment, it's a completely different ballgame between playing the loader from Risk of Rain 1, where you're just kind of like, I don't know, kind of your grappling options are limited, to something like this, where you are literally Spider-Manning your way across the map in like completely chaotic fashion. And it is just on like a completely other level of craziness. And
you talk about craziness and chaos like it's good, though.
It is good. Like, that's what I'm here for. Like, sign me up, baby. Like, the chaos factor is the thing. Like, once you've passed the 30 minute mark, and like when you went, so for example, I was just playing the ninja character, the mercenary, and I was remembering the times where I was like trying to ninja my way around in Risk of Rain 1. I'm like, yeah, I don't know, like this kind of works, but the platforming is like, it's okay, but it feels like there's something missing. This one, I was literally running around like Metal Gear Rising Revengeance Raiden mode, constantly running around slicing and dicing, to the point where it was like just comical to look at. And I'm like, this is great. I'm loving this. I'm like in the air swiping at enemies for like 30 seconds straight. Like, yeah, way, way more entertaining, I think. But I think it's not even just like the fact that it is 3D. I think it's like they made a lot of smart decisions with how it plays in 3D that, like, that's why it's fun. Because like, if it was just like copy paste, like all the abilities are exactly the same.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you have to rebuild pretty much everything from the ground up.
Yeah. Will, I'm frankly kind of shocked. Let's downgrade it. I'm surprised. Very surprised, though. Surprised that you're the one asking this question about, oh, making a 3D, does that just make it fun? You famously hate side scrollers. So like, isn't 3D just the bare minimum, like, for a game to even
absolutely
potentially
not
be good?
That's just one more D of side scrolling that he hates. Now he has to forward scroll too.
Yeah, okay. I mean, top downs, I suppose, are very different. But
what are my top games right now? RimWorld, Slay the Spire, Balatro, Luck Be a Landlord, Inscription, War Sim, Rogue Tower. I mean,
yes,
Rogue,
yes,
okay, Rogue Tower.
So, all like 3D shooters. Obviously.
Yes, but none of these are side scrollers. So like, the fact, would you not? I don't understand what your issue
my
is.
My point
with
is none of
3D.
Them. Absolutely none of them, like they're all 2D, or like primarily 2D, I guess Rogue Tower being a slight exception there.
I feel like it's actually that they're 0D. You're not moving in them. Like,
right.
Slay the Spire is not 2D or 3D. It's
you're looking at the wrong dimension. Like, the wrong dimension, because it's not about the number of dimensions for, you know, first, second, third dimension, fourth. It's about the focus of the gameplay, and I like to think of fun as a thing that it's comprised of three elements. That's going to be accuracy, timing, and judgment. And so,
and where does 3D gaming excel in this?
Well, this
accuracy.
Yeah, accuracy and timing. Accuracy and timing are, in my opinion, unfun.
Why are they on your pillar of
100% judgment? And the only game on my list, I think, that is an exception here is Vampire Survivors is my highest ranked chaos game. But that's the one where there was a lot of exceptional properties to it. But everything else is just essentially, you know, let me take my time, scratch my chin and think about the next move. Like that's when you think, have a plan, execute the plan and it works like you expect or better. You know, that's where you feel good.
It's this is the reason.
Like, fair point. Yeah, 3D is not, though you have serious disdain for platformers, 3D is not, doesn't fare much better in your book.
This is also the reason why Will doesn't play Blitz or Bullet Chess primarily, and why he always plays classical, because you have to like stop and take 65 minutes per move instead of, well, we're just going to make this move that probably isn't the right one, and oh yeah, it's an absolute blunder, but my opponent also just blundered, and now it's just like a chaotic slap fight with slapping each other with salmon here. Like that's where I think like the chaos of this game brings the fun, is the fact that like you don't have time to make those like beard scratching calculations, and like there are options to do so, but I guess we can talk about it in a little bit, but
I mean, you don't have a lot of time, but like you go into a run with like some semblance of a strategy, and the first level is going to kind of inform, the first couple levels are going to inform like kind of what your options are. I feel like in my limited, I don't know, 7-8 hours of play. But the chaos you're referring to, Scott, let's be clear. Colin, you were talking about, you know, collecting money, killing enemies, collecting money and buying upgrades. When we say you're buying upgrades, you're buying a lot of upgrades. Like you just see at the top of the screen, this bar, this wow, this ridiculous wow hotbar-esque like sea of icons, maybe not a sea of icons, but you have like a big row of like, you know, you get into, you know, the fourth, fifth level, you're nearing kind of the end of the run. And, you know, you've got minimum like a dozen items and then multiples of some of those. And, There's a lot going on. And as I mentioned in my description, they are impactful and interesting, which we love to see.
Yeah, I think like
most of them.
I've flipped like back and forth between, I think one of the big criticisms that I had when we did our first Risk of Rain episode was I felt like there was this one option in the game. So there's like these things called artifacts, which are like they're gameplay modifiers. That
artifacts.
Yeah,
piqued my interest.
Stalker. They are gameplay impacting options that will like change things to be like, oh, instead of you picking up items out of chests, items drop randomly from monsters now, or you can pick what specific item you want out of chests, or monsters do friendly fire to each other, but also you and your allies do friendly fire to each other, that kind of thing. So the artifact of command specifically gets a lot of talk in the Risk of Rain broader community of like, is this something that should be on by default, of like you being able to pick your items that you get randomly out of these chests?
No.
And I've flipped back and forth on this because the first episode I was like, Risk of Rain 1, yeah, I have to be able to like to do a build in order for it to work, in order for me to have fun here. I think I've come back around on it that the random ones, like the random gameplay element, I think is the way to play. And I think that might be more fun.
I think they went too far though. I mean, you're at exactly the opposite ends of the spectrum on command or no command. It's either you get to choose any item of all of the items, or you open the chest and it's a random thing. So you either have 100% choice or 0% choice. Whereas we all know Slay the Spire has taught us
that's what I was waiting for. Three. Yeah, you're right.
There's your bingo blank spot.
And that's the thing, is they have that too. They have the little like three option choice thing every once in a while. I mean, I think
every once in a while, all the time.
Relative to the chests, it's what? 10% of the time?
Two or three like per stage.
I think it should be 50% of the chests should be.
Whoa.
Those.
Okay.
Like, I think it should be a substantial amount.
Hmm.
All right, maybe more because, like 1.75 per stage.
Yeah, I think that's That is the interesting part of like you when you say you were talking about trying to make a build, that's not really something that you can do. The build just happens to you.
Oh no. You gotta use those printers.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you can use the printers. There are some options, but you're pretty darn at the whim of what you find.
There are ways to steer.
It's the difference between you're on an old car and you're going slow and it does not have power steering versus I want a new modern car. I don't want to have to shift. I want it to do it for me, and I want it to power steer, and I want to be able to roll down the windows and have it just I don't want.
That's
to
an excellent analogy, but I want to make it clear you're not on a mine cart here. You are in a car without power steering, which is better than the alternative, I suppose. But I get where you're coming from, Colin.
So I guess we have like the difference between Risk of Rain 1, where your options were like basically everything was random or not random at all. And like you didn't really have much of a choice there. And I think Risk of Rain 2 is kind of split the difference a little bit with Colin, like you were saying, the pick three. Well, I guess they had the pick three ones in Risk of Rain 1, but they also have like these colored chests where like the green ones are like the healing items or the red ones are the offensive items. And that gives you maybe more direction still of like, well, okay, this character here that I have, these items that I have right now, do I need more support healing stuff? Do I need more offensive damage? Do I need like a usable thing? Do I need just like an army of drones floating by me? And I think that like the more that I've kind of studied the gameplay system, the more that I've kind of come around to like, there's the balance of the increasing, like the constantly increasing difficulty meter going on. The balance of like, okay, how much time am I realistically going to spend like grinding the map to get all of these chests? And the balance of like, well, is any of that stuff from the chest going to be useful for what I'm doing here? And if it's not, then you can just beeline to the boss and then go to the next stage. And in theory, if let's say, you know, you roll the die well and you get a lot of items that synergize with your character's base abilities really well, then you'd be like, oh yes, okay, I can take on the final boss now. Or you can start another loop of the game and continue that process again and say, okay, I'm going to try to keep this power bank rolling and seeing if I can run that risk reward, the risk of rain, of how much time am I going to spend hunting for chests versus what's useful versus what am I going to scrap and like try to like reformulate that build over time. I feel like the scrapping mechanic really adds a lot of balance to that push-pull system to give you a little bit there. Because also, as I was finding out, even with the Artifact of Command on, you're sitting there like, okay, let me open up this little thing that's dropped down and pick from the selection of items that I got going here. The game is still running and there are still enemies shooting at you. And if you take too long to beard scratch, even though you thought you were overpowered, some little beetle is just going to come by and sideswipe you off the map and you're doomed anyway.
You better scratch quick.
Yeah. So I think that like even with the Artifact of Command and you getting like the base 9 or 10 items that you need to get your build overpowered, at that point, like I was just randomly picking them because there were so many enemies on the screen. I'm like, I can't, there's not enough time. There's not enough time for me to pick something. So it almost wound up circling back in on itself of like, I just need the random drop.
Yeah. This game reminds me aesthetically of, I was trying to describe it when we had an opportunity to play co-op. We did one run of co-op, lasted about an hour. And ended with a very dramatic 1v1 duel between Scott as the pirate captain with his cyber peg leg and the final boss, the king of nothing.
What we watched.
And sadly, it ended in tragedy. But boy, was it dramatic. And you gave him a run for his money. I think you had him down to like 25% health. And then he like teleported behind you. Nothing personal, Captain. And gotcha. Anyway, I was mentioning while we were playing co-op that the game aesthetically reminded me very much of a game that came on old-timey bubble Macintoshes, the colorful bubble bulbous Macintoshes. And I figured out what the name of this game is. It's called Nanosaur. Did anyone play Nanosaur?
I never heard of it.
No, like Dinosaur Nanosaur?
you're a dinosaur. It's in a fully 3D rendered environment. You're a velociraptor with like a gun on your back. You're jumping around. Just the worst, most god-awful platforming, most god-awful awful shooting. I'm going on record on saying Nanosaur sucks ass. I'm sorry. Like, even if it came pre-installed on some computers, which I think it did, terrible, just terrible. What are you thinking? Better off playing a typing game. So this is like kind of like if Nanosaur was like fun. I feel like
I'm looking through some of these screenshots, and you know, there is a dinosaur character in the game that spits out acidic vomit, and if you get that dinosaur a jetpack and some some handguns, I mean, we're basically halfway to Nanosaur right there.
Oh yeah, forgive me. I'm sorry. The jetpack is on his back. He has the gun in his hand like a, you know, a civilized gentleman. Mm-hmm. God, look at that interface. Ugh, disgusting. Just terrible. And like that draw distance fog. Anyway,
yeah, I thought this was
speaking of fog, speaking of draw distance, the environments in this game, as I mentioned before, they're very big. I expected them. So like the scale is what I mean. The scale is big, and that kind of is similar to the first game in certain ways. But the actual map itself is like fairly manageable. I described these previously as being big maps, but not huge maps. And over the course of a run, you go through what, 5 or 6 of them, something like that, generally on average. And I feel like they kind of hit a sweet spot for like there being some exploration, there being time to like run around and like maneuver and you know, search for loot and everything without being like so big that you're getting lost or annoyed, which I appreciate. For a long time, way before I played this game and I just looked at like screenshots, I thought, oh man, those maps are gonna be a pain in the butt to get around, and I'm gonna have to like be dropping jelly beans and like backtracking, and it's gonna be a pain in my rear. And I'm happy to report that it was very rarely a pain in my rear.
Yeah, and I think the difference here between our multiplayer session and running around solo is pretty stark with navigating the environment, where the four of us running around a map, like we're finding the exit like bam, like instantly almost, because we have a lot more eyes looking. And then when someone pings it, everyone else is like, okay, yeah, it's over there. In the amount of time that I've put into this game, like, and like my experience from Risk of Rain 1, it's a lot harder to find the teleporter in this one. Like, you have the 3D environment. It feels like it's maybe like a less distinct looking doodad than parts of the other map. It's very dark.
Well, it can hide. You can not see it even if it's on your screen. Yeah. Because I feel like that's very difficult to happen in Risk of Rain 1. Like, if the teleporter is on your screen, you've clocked it.
Yeah. I agree with you, Colin. Definitely,
but also like I was able to find a settings option. You go into the settings, main menu settings at the very bottom. I think of like the main like first menu bar thing in the settings is like a thing that has like an option to scale the teleporter particle effects such that like you can see them from a much further distance.
Ooh.
I'm like, okay, how easy is this to see? It is way easier to see. And it makes me think that, like, why is this not like an accessibility option that's on by default is kind of baffling. But I think the reason why is it because it's part of that gameplay loop of like, I don't know where the teleporter is. It's maybe like 3 or 4 static spots on the map that it cycles through. But that's part of your run is like navigating through the map to hunt, like basically maze hunt for where the exit is, and along the way deciding how much time am I going to spend fighting, you know, fighting your MMO ads versus like, okay, opening up these chests and things like that. And then finally getting to the exit, get to the boss fight, and then repeat that. But if you implicitly know where the exit is right off the bat, I don't know that it necessarily makes it worse. I think it makes it better because then you know where to go and you have more of a little bit more freedom in your decision making. But I mean, just in terms of an accessibility option, like I just want to know where the exit is half the time and then strategize around it. It feels like
I didn't feel like it was too terribly difficult. Like it didn't. Most of the time I found the exit before I was like I have to exit immediately. Mm. Like a lot of times you'd be like, okay, cool, there it is. I'll hunt around a little bit more, try and get those last chests that are nearby or something. I don't think that the maps are they're not easy to navigate, but they're navigatable. I feel like my biggest complaint is that you're pretty slow in the first level. Like before you get any upgrades, you are kind of slow. It does feel like you're kind of just wandering around. That goes away in the later levels once you are faster, enemies are appearing more often, and like your fighting is more fun because you just got more stuff happening. Like lasers are coming from your robots and missiles are shooting off of you and all of that stuff. I feel like a lot of it's slow in both the physical movement and the gameplay in the first level. But you can find the exit fairly without too much terrible difficulty.
Yeah. I guess I'm just kind of miffed at this one specific instance where there's one map. It's kind of already dark. It has a high amount of verticality to it. And I was already playing the Spider-Man lady loader robot and just like zip lining all across the map. I'm like, it's got to be around here somewhere. I know I'm looking for these little red fireflies. I don't, am I going crazy? Like it has to be around here somewhere. And it took me, I don't know, maybe like, and it sounds silly. Like it took me 5 minutes to find the exit to this thing.
Yeah. But that's a lot. That's like
in this game, that's a lot. Yeah.
Right. So, and I mean, I don't know if we've mentioned this yet, but there is a continuous time ticker clock on this. And the difficulty is visibly ramping up. It goes from easy to medium to hard to very hard to I don't remember what the other ones are. Which is probably your means you're gonna die. But so anytime you spend in the level where you're not doing something useful is actually starting to become wasted time. Mm-hmm. Which I like as a mechanic for the most part.
Totally.
It can be frustrated every once in a while. But it, I mean, I am the kind of gamer, and I'm pretty sure I've said this before, where I will, if you let me, I will go and I will make sure that I go the wrong way first so that I make sure that I hit every single little crevice and nook. And like, I don't, and some, a lot of times to the detriment of the fun that I'm having, but I can't not do it. So I like that this incentivizes you to make that not the optimal gameplay choice. Like you'd really do have to make like that is the decision of each level is when do you exit the level?
Yeah.
And I know that that is sometimes a decision in other roguelike games, but I feel like it's more the decision of that is put more forward in this where like it's not just, oh, it's one of the decisions you're making as you're like going down into the depths of the labyrinth or whatever. It's like, no, this is like a major part of how you play the game.
I like it a lot.
You could spend all day in Dead Cells or some other, or like Binding of Isaac, just like grinding out the whole floor of enemies. Yeah. And you wouldn't have to worry about, oh no, like the enemies are going to be much stronger at the end of the floor as a result of me spending this time grinding.
Right.
It goes the other way where if you wrap up a stage a little early, you don't have that guilt, that like completionist guilt of like, oh, right. I didn't get all that because you can justify by saying, well, you know, the time I saved will theoretically, you know, make future levels easier. And if you didn't spend all your money, same thing. Like, oh, no, I didn't spend all my money. Well, no problem. Then it's not.
Oh, I feel bad because I didn't like look through all the parts of the levels. Like, oh, I feel good because I did it fast.
Yeah, you did it quick. Got to get it done quick.
Which, I mean, you do get, I mean, you were talking about Dead Cells, but like you do get some of that in Dead Cells if you're doing a, like trying to do a fast run. But there is never that break point where you have in something like Dead Cells where it's like, oh, well, I'm off of the pace. Therefore, I can't ever get back on the pace. It's like, well, I'm off the pace, but that just means I need to go faster next time. Like I need, like, it doesn't get easier. Like the difficulty level stays increased as you go through the game. So
yeah.
Now, at the very beginning of a run, when you fly down in the drop pod, like you have to press a button to actually get out of the drop pod. If you just like leave, if you just go AFK, will the game just like ramp up to level difficulty?
I think I've seen gameplay footage of like people just kind of sitting there, and I don't think you take damage inside the drop pod. I also don't remember.
Right. I think you're. I think you're safe. I think so.
And I don't remember if you get automatically kicked out of the drop pod after a little while.
The only winning move is not to play.
There you go.
Agreed.
Yeah. There you go.
But before your drop pod drops.
Indeed. Yeah. What is up with this drop pod, Scott?
Well, this was something that I wasn't entirely clear on, because in the Risk of Rain 1 game, Risk of Rain Returns actually has a very nice, cool, like anime cinematic intro. And Risk of Rain Returns is just the exact same thing as Risk of Rain 1. But the story for that is like a cargo ship out in deep space has been, you know, looting planets nearby. You looted the wrong planet, bucko, and the boss like teleports onto your ship, blows it up, and the people on the ship have drop podded down onto the planet Petrichor 5, and are trying to escape, trying to find a way off of the planet. In Risk of Rain 2, our story begins with a very cool 3D cinematic of the ship Safe Travels as it's traveling through space, and you're coming across the survival beacon coordinates for a planet that isn't even marked on the star charts, and someone's saying to the captain, like, you know, are there any visuals of the crashed ship? No, it's just debris. Any survivors? No, there's the bioscanner is dark. And the voiceover goes on to say, the distress beacon, it mentioned a lot. Monsters, fighting, and, sir, do you think we're ready? And then the commando guy just kind of, like, looks up, like, ready for, like, bloodthirsty revenge for his fallen commando brothers from Risk of Rain 1. It wasn't entirely clear to me if the drop pod that comes down is you, like, proactively drop podding, or if like your ship got blown up again. I'm sure it's in the lore, because this game is nothing if not lore heavy in its Dark Souls style item descriptions once you pick them up and stuff in the settings menu, but yeah, you're drop podding in as tradition with a Risk of Rain game. You are going past all the previous remnants, I guess, of the ship from the first game. And then in the last final boss fight level, you're coming across a part of the ship that's been, I guess, force fielded around, and you got to figure out a way to get that force field off so you can, I guess, take that thing back to the mothership. And had we succeeded in our final boss fight in co-op, we were so close. We were so close. We'll probably have to do it again, but you kill the final boss, and like all good video games, he starts a self-destruct sequence of the moon that you're on, and you have I think like a pulse pounding 2 minutes to get back to that ship and secure it in a similar teleporter securing style. But I didn't realize the first time that I had gotten to that point that you have to, like, boss is dead. It's like rumbling, alarms are going off, moon detonation imminent, it says. The timer is counting down. You're like, oh God, Super Metroid vibes. What do I do?
And there's well, obviously, yep.
There's these like floating orbs in the boss arena.
Oh,
I had no idea what those were, so I was trying to run away from them, like, no more boss fight, just get me out of this thing. The boss fight is in this enormous, like, super arena, but that's been force fielded off too. So I'm up there like pounding on the force field glass, like, let me out. And I didn't realize that I had to jump through those orbs that teleport you down to the main kind of part of the level. Level is exploding and crackling all over. You are Super Metroid running back to your ship, securing your ship. And then I think every time that I've done it, I've had like less than like 20 seconds on the clock or something. And this is with all of my overpowered items and everything. And I'm just like, oh my God, am I not going to make it again this time? But it's always like razor thin somehow. You escape off of the moon. And again, in traditional video game format, you are greeted with a moon implosion where it just gets sucked into the void, and you live on to see another day, heading back to the ship, hopefully. But yeah, that's effectively a run in Risk of Rain. But I think the draw for high level stuff, like doing that, you could easily do that on like the super easy difficulties and things. But doing so on Monsoon or the Eclipse modes is where it's at, because that's like your Ascension levels for this game. You have like Ascension levels effectively for each of the different characters. You beat one, and then that unlocks the next Ascension level for everybody. So yeah, and I think that's the kind of thing that like you can't use that Artifact of Command for. You have to do that with random item drops. Like it's basically just like play the game base level, but with some extra challenge modifiers tied onto it. So I think that's where the big draw is like, how do you go through these Eclipse levels? How do you like understand the intricacies of the engineer plopping down turrets and then hiding in a force bubble and then sipping on a Mai Tai while the turrets do all the work for you?
That's how the players get the 200 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, like the game's been out a while. There's been a couple big DLC content drops for it.
Scott, do you have any of the DLCs?
And some of them even worked.
I do not have any of the DLCs, shamefully. But because I think that like at the time I was like, well, I don't know, like the base game just feels so complete already that I don't know that I've really hit that wall yet of, okay, I need more stuff to do, because we have a bunch of characters who return from the first game. We have a bunch of characters that are new to this game, and we have like four, maybe five new characters from DLC releases. And I feel like I barely even scratched the surface with just the ones from the base game, even.
I didn't get any of the DLCs, but I feel like the biggest thing that from looking at them that they would add is just more levels. So that's one of the things I was a little disappointed at, is they're not randomly generated, right?
No.
So they're static maps. I mean, I didn't really play enough to for that to be a true game changer. Like, they were random enough to me, but they were, you know, there's only three levels to start with, like for three options from the first level. So if you die and you're like, okay, I'm back to the same level, which I don't know, I felt a little bit less fun. I think that it probably didn't really matter in the amount of time that I played, but I think having the DLC to have like boost that up to a couple more levels adds a little bit more variety of like, you know, it's just literally a different environment. So I think that's probably where I would like, I probably should have bought the DLC and been playing like, oh, you know, if the difference between a 1-3 chance and a 1-6 chance having the same map is quite different.
There are, I'll say this for DLC stuff, I think there's a way to preview it in a way. So there's this one, another kind of new addition to Risk of Rain 2 are things called Prismatic Trials, which are it's like a speed run mode for the game where your goal is to beat just two stages. And I think it's random every time. I don't know if it starts you on like the first stage and then like, or like one of the first stages and then one of the second stages always. But I was like, what the hell is this stage? I've never seen this one. It lets you play through the DLC stages, cause it's a fixed seed for everybody in the Risk of Rain, ecosystem. End up
playing something maybe that you don't even own.
That, and I believe you can, if I remember right, I think the item drops are also from the DLC, and I think you might be able to use the DLC characters for that also. So if I remember right, I think that's a way to be like, okay, yeah, like it's like a fixed seed for the day. I think you can try it any number of times that you want and then just see what your high score is. But yeah, like it's like effectively everything unlocked go nuts, not gated by any DLC stuff. Cause yeah, like the one level is like, definitely never seen this before. Oh, this is a DLC thing. Oh, this is kind of nice. Like, I could definitely see the appeal with that. And yeah, like, and like similarly in the vein of Dead Cells, you know, that has like the other environments, the different biomes, the more stuff to add to your loot table. It just feels like a good idea for like those things to help to like increase your toy box, basically. But so far, like, I'm still trying to figure out how some of these characters work. And
I think that there's looking at the differences between the DLCs and the base game, I think the base game has plenty of characters that to wet your whistle for at least the amount of time that we're going to play in 2 weeks. And then, the DLC adds a couple more, but I mean, I think you start off with what, like 8 characters that you could unlock?
Yeah, returning for Risk of Rain 2 are the friendly Commando from the intro. We have Huntress, who I think I've spent the most time with. Bandit, your cyborg cowboy. Mercenary, your cyborg ninja. Your engineer, enough said. Acrid, your toxic, barfing, poison dog. Loader, the suit from Alien that punches the queen out the back of the spaceship. And then one of the DLC characters is the chef robot. The new ones for Risk of Rain 2 are Mole T, which is a robot with a nail gun. you have Rex, which everyone hates. You have the cyborg captain. You have one character that you can only play as once you've collected all the equipment to transform into that character during your run, called the Heretic, which is supposed to be super OP. But the DLC characters are also interesting. There's a Void Fiend character that I don't really know a whole lot about. The Rail Gunner character, she's a rework of the Sniper character from Risk of Rain 1. Effectively kind of the same deal, a Sniper type character, very much like zoom in, skill shot, op your way to victory for Risk of Rain 2. And then the most recent DLC has the Seeker and the False Sun, who I think False Sun is like one of the bosses of the DLC that once you beat them, they can join your party. And then it's the meme of like, you know, the boss when you fight them, super overpowered. The boss when they join your party, like pathetic weakling.
Yeah, but you blew off all their armor and now they're like a little...
Right.
The out of the their corpse emerges an egg and it's like a cutesy version of it.
Yeah, let's be clear. Scott, which one of those did you say people hate? Rex?
Yeah, Rex, I think is the... I don't know if it's because the play style for this character is very different or what, but like you see, and again, like I'm going off of like all of the Risk of Rain Eclipse tier 8 or like level 8 tier list guides you see, and like some of them, and then of course I'm totally missing on this list the Artificer, where like some of them are just like brain dead easy mode, like Artificer or Engineer. That's just like, I'll just like float up here in the middle of the air and just hurl Super Saiyan missiles at you. I think Rex is the playstyle. There is like that unit uses their HP for ammo or something weird.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's like their movement is also bizarre and like the item synergies like don't really work or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But that's also the one that you unlock. When we were playing co-op, I don't remember if it was Colin or Andrew who excitedly picked up the piece of equipment off of the drop pod. Like,
yes, that was me. That'd be me.
Got the piece of equipment that if you take too much burst damage, it'll like that will set off the equipment bomb that you've just picked up. If you are brave enough to take that to what I think like one of the or it's the Abyssal Depths stage 4 or 5. The broken Rex unit sits on that stage, kind of in the top middle area. If you go there and
to get it,
you just have to like carry that piece of equipment and not get bursted through a bunch of stages. Put it in, hooray! You've unlocked the Rex unit that everyone hates,
that no one wants to use. To on this topic, the characters all, at least the ones I played with, felt distinct. But still like, you know, enjoyable. And I was kind of reluctant to try any other character other than the Commando. And once I finally did, albeit for very short periods of time, I was impressed with how quick they were to pick up, but how distinct they were and how like immediately like fun, how much immediate fun I was having.
I didn't like Multi.
Which one's that?
Sorry, that's all.
that's the nail gun robot. And Colin, gotcha. Is that because you, like me, also didn't realize that you could toggle your left click ability between.
The first time I played, yes, absolutely. Okay. And I was like, this is so weak. I don't understand. I just lost. But I don't know. He felt slow. I've only played with the first four characters, so.
Mm-hmm. So let me get this straight. His primary fire is a toggle weapon.
It's like a nail gun that like on you hold or down. Off. You hold down to like auto shoot and has bad accuracy, but when you stop shooting, it like shotgun bursts, and then your utility ability like flips that to almost kind of like the Half-Life sniper, like the superheated sniper iron rod shooter.
Rebar.
Sure, yeah, the rebar crossbow, okay.
And the sprint for it like turn like huddles up into like a little ball and then just like hurls itself forward super fast and like almost uncontrollably.
That's the one that I didn't really like the sprint part.
Yeah,
sounds because
you're acting like a bowling ball basically.
Yeah, a bowling ball. It's like I didn't really like the nail gun one. I liked the rail rebar. And so it felt like they were very opposite ends of the spectrum. Like one is you're trying to like snipe from far away, and the other ones you have to be close and smash.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a tangent.
This wide variety of movement and combat style, I would say is probably an argument for having moved it to 3D. You've got, you know, with all these wacky wild dimensions, so much opportunity to explore different gameplay styles and abilities and things of that nature.
Can we all just agree that third-person view is the worst idea ever? I mean, I know you like Fortnite, but I don't give a shit. I think that all that design, that style, first of all, the style is shit.
Whoa, real quick.
The style
I like
shit
Fortnite.
And the...
That's a strong phrase. To be clear, I enjoy playing Fortnite, which is distinctly different than I like Fortnite.
Okay,
to be clear, I'm throwing it out there. It is very much a social thing, but it is also fun and pretty free. Sorry, please continue.
I'm just thinking. I just want to say, first person is just always better. I don't understand why.
I generally agree, Will. To be honest,
yeah.
Generally speaking.
I think for this game, having it be third person is necessary. It's so chaotic.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So my biggest complaint, and the reason that I like Risk of Rain 1 more than I like this, is access to the information about the various bad guys that are around you.
Mm.
Like Risk of Rain 1, you can see everything at all times. You're never at a lack of information because you can't see it on the screen. Risk of Rain 2... it does have some level of like, you can't see 180 degrees minus a little bit. That's like, if they're very close to you, you can see it. I think if it was in first person, it'd be even more so. You wouldn't even be able to see that you're being hit from behind.
Sure. Like, it's got to be like,
oh, something's targeting me, like a targeting laser from behind. That's going to kill me if it hits. I think that if you were in first person mode, you'd have to change the way the game is played. You'd have to like incorporate like sound cues or something to know that you're about to get like shot from behind.
I mean, and crucially, Halo and like other games where you're getting shot from all sides.
Well,
sure, but Halo is a vastly different game than this. Like you're fighting like three guys at a time and you're trying to like be a little tactical. Like this game relies on you becoming overpowered and like fighting off hordes.
One of the principal motivators for the devs to try to do a 3D game also was that they wanted to try to see if they could get like the items that you pick up to be attached and like visibly shown on your character's model,
which I love.
That's
which I think would be hard to do in first person.
I think it's a nice thing to. I mean, being able to see your character is like a visual flair perk, but I mean, I'm gonna take it back to my classic. If this game had no style, would it still be fun to play? Strip away all good art assets and rely only on mechanics. I think that you still need to have a third person view in order for it to be a playable game with this level of enemies and things shooting you from behind. And
well,
that just tells you you need to not have the enemies, that style of gameplay.
And that's kind of instructing you. Really, the only time you want third person is there's only one game in that I can think of that where this is a good idea. It's called Rocket League. And I'll tell you why you need to have third person. Because you're spinning around. If you're first person in the car and you're doing fucking somersaults, like, you're just not going to, you can't, you're
gonna... That's the only reason is because you're worried about your stomach.
They also do it because they want you to have a reason to buy skins. And if you can't see your car all the time, then you can't know how cool your car looks.
But to be clear, a game in which you are using the body of your car to maneuver a giant ball always was going to be third person from the jump.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if you were actually a driver in that car, how hard it would be to do any of this stuff? Like, ugh. Either the ball is on top of your car and you can't see it, or the ball is in front of your car and you can't see anything else.
or any of the time they did, like, the boost forward flipping stuff, and then your screen is just, like, a disaster of movement.
There are actually condemned prisoners in all of those Rocket League cars, to be clear.
Twisted Metal 6, Rocket League.
Well, I will tell you that my personal preference is generally for a first-person perspective in action games, but just, like, I don't know, there's certain gameplay types, and it starts from, like, the design document. It's, like, foundational. Just some games, they gotta be third person. But when there are two games presented to me, like, hey, you know, it could work either way, I tend to agree with going into first person. That was my hold up with PUBG for a long time. It's like, well, I want to play first person and I want it to be locked in, and so I didn't actually play it until they had first person only servers. That's more to...
Will, do you
anyway,
play...
Anyway, this is a very interesting topic of conversation, one that I don't think we have time to explore.
No, I think we have all...
Will,
do you play Skyrim
season,
in
baby.
First person?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I despise the third person view. Mm. But as we're talking about this, though, I will say I did think about the game Valheim. And that's a game that I rate very highly that is in third person, that does have, I won't say cartoony, but, like, less realism. Why is that one better? Well, it's a survival crafting game
very
that
different.
Focuses
yeah,
on,
sure.
yeah, building stuff. And so, you know, being able to see where you are in relation to that stuff, probably useful.
Oh,
but then you think
yeah.
about Minecraft and you think, well, you don't actually need to have third person. So...
That was just to show off the amazing hand models, which I know all you fellows are great fans of, horribly blocky and rudimentary hand models, famously something no one else remembers, but I won't let go, ironically. Hey, on the topic of aesthetics, Valheim is an interesting comparison. Obviously it doesn't look exactly like this game, but, like, they both have a similar kind of stylized, vaguely cartoonish, unrealistic art style. What do we think of the art direction?
I think the art direction in this game is really good. I like the... I think Will getting a big
strong reaction on the webcam.
I really like the art direction for the first game a lot, because I think that, like, it has this, like, overwhelmingly huge alien, like, crunchy, like, heavy pixel art aspect to it that I really vibe with a lot. It has, like, this really, like, gritty, dirty sci-fi aspect to it, and this game is it feels like much more smooth and low poly, which, like, it doesn't feel quite the same as the first one, but I think it still matches, like, it aesthetically for the most part. I think, like, the level design is very atmospheric and moody. I think the character designs are just as good as they were in the first one. All the enemy designs are kind of the same, and yeah, have that kind of, like, low poly aesthetic to them. And the music, I think, somehow is even better than the first one. But I'll let others speak to their artistic thoughts.
I want to just put out real quick, generally speaking, I like the aesthetics. So I think, you know, if you know me personally, usually when I first introduce myself, this usually comes up. Everybody knows that I really despise spherical helmet designs in sci-fi. Really hate it. But the Commando, he looks good. He's the exception, and I applaud them for that.
Especially when you get the little sunglasses on him.
Sunglasses and all that stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Can you give me the example of what you hate?
What it rarely comes up. Every once in a while I'll come across like a video game or like an anime or something where it's like, yeah, just like in this sci-fi universe, there is like armor where the helmet is just a perfect circle, like a diving
like
helmet.
Like a Dark almost. Souls. I'm thinking if there's a Dark Souls helmet, I think.
Not unlike that, yeah. But specifically in a sci-fi sense, I don't like it. And actually, this is so hyper-specific. In the Warhammer like kit-bashing community, which I am a part of, where you take your Warhammer model and you customize it, that it's a somewhat popular aesthetic where people will say, my helmet is going to be a literal marble that is like inset into this giant robot. And I don't know why, but I do not like it. Maybe it's because I'm afraid of painting a perfect sphere. It's not interesting to me. It's like, I think the idea is that like, oh, it's so plain, like this really undetailed, just perfect round sort of representing the face is striking. But for me, I don't know why. I'm just like, I bounce off of it. Like, that's not science fiction. I need a helmet that has proper detail and looks like a face. Anyway, tangent done. Will and Colin, what do you think of these graphics?
I will say that I liked the graphics. I think I liked the graphics of the first one more, but that's because I really, really liked the first one's aesthetic. I liked how small you are. And how you felt like you were truly very small in a giant, enormous world. I think you lose a little bit of that in this game. The world still feels big.
Do you want to zoom out more in the third person view? Would that help?
Maybe. It's just a really tiny third person view.
I mean,
I think that it would be unplayable if you were zoomed out more. Like,
why? You have a little cursor to tell you where you're pointing. I mean, like,
I think it would be less. I think it would be less enjoyable to play the actual like pointing and clicking and shooting and whatnot. But I still like the graphics a lot. I think they did a really good job of, you cannot translate the graphics of the first game into the second game. Like, it's gritty pixel art that just is not a thing that you can do in three dimensions. So I think they did a really good job of
would try to do that anyway. If you recall,
I can only handle so many super gnomes. I don't need the PTSD of the chip 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 chip.
Yeah, I don't think that actually does get the like. I think this is kind of the equivalent of 3D pixel art. Like, low poly is to 3D as pixel art is to 2D. You're using a lower number of primitive elements to build your world, and it's not necessarily a throwback, but it is embracing the use of stylized elements rather than trying to go for pure realism. So I think it does a good job of translating it to a 3D world, not using the same style but using the same feel. They do make up for, I mean, a lot of the vibe of this is the music, and the music, we'll get into it more, I'm sure, but the music is excellent. And like, it's not exactly the same as the first game, but it's the same. Some of it is the same, and it's just great. Just some excellent guitar. I mean, while Andrew and I were dead watching Will and Scott try to finish the final level when we're doing co-op, we're just commenting like, wait, Andrew, are you at the same point in the music as me? Is it like, is the guitar just absolutely shredding right now? I enjoy just listening to that, watching people play.
Oh yeah, we're jamming out for sure.
Now that I think about it, I mean, I didn't really love this game, but Helldivers is another example of one of these third person games, and we played that one for a little bit, it was a bit more realistic, I think, overall.
Yeah, totally.
And so, and I think, I liked that, I think, as I was trying to think of like other games that might fit this. And I remember too that like the reason you can't actually have the zoom out is because as you look up, the camera has to spin around you and get close to you. And if you are really far away and you look up and it just suddenly like it just gets really close, then it gets disorienting, I imagine. So so that makes sense. I can understand why they wouldn't do that, but overall, I mean, I don't like
angry cartoon emails averted.
I don't like cartoon graphics. I think overall, I mean, it's just if you don't have the budget to make high resolution 3D stuff, with the purpose of 3D from my point of view is the realism, then just do a 2D game. That's kind of that's where I sit on this.
Interesting.
Just make it.
Or disagree.
Well, there's only some of us can be right, though. So you know.
only some of us can be Will right.
I do really, really quick want to touch on the mod scene again for the Risk of Rain universe.
Mods,
where
right.
I feel like I'm a little like, I don't know.
Whoa, sorry, real quick, Scott. Oh, that's a lovely collection of mods you have there. It'd be a shame if someone were to come along and say, I don't know, merge the code bases between the PC version and the console version and tie the physics to the frame rate and completely ruin them all overnight.
Oops. Who
could have seen
that
coming?
Yeah.
Yeah. How was that mod scene?
So I think like the mod scene is surprisingly popular for this game. And I don't know if this is something that like rarely do I see Steam Workshop mods with downloads in the millions. But here from the Risk of Rain Thunderstore. So Thunderstore is like a mod. It's like a Nexus mod equivalent kind of.
Yeah. Games enter.
Yeah. And there's some other games that have their mods hosted on there, but the most popular ones on here are the Enforcer returning from Risk of Rain 1 with 2.3 million downloads, the Starstorm 2 mod, I think like kind of collection utility. It's like effectively like a fan DLC mod package, as it were. 2.2 million. A more expanded Lunar Bazaar, which we didn't really kind of talk about, but another sort of optional shop zone, 1.6 million. The Miner returning from Risk of Rain 1, 1.4 million. And the feature that I feel like another thing that should be baked into the game by default with 1.43 million downloads is something called Proper Save, which allows you to save the game at the end of a teleporter sequence.
What a deal. Yeah, I have Risk of Rain alt tabbed at the moment. Happy to report. So yeah, that'd be a convenient feature.
Where yeah I think
I'll
like,
say it's I'm gonna go ahead and say it's unforgivable not to be able to suspend your game.
Especially
like, people have lives and you need to be able to pause your game.
Not if you play this game. You don't have a life if you play this game.
Because there's some achievements, like 100% agree, because there's some achievements that are like go on a run with like the commando through 20 stages, which on the face of it, like, yeah, that sounds like a fun adventure. I'd love to do that. Like somehow this game is like magnetically attracted for distraction of like, okay, I'm going to go for a run in Risk of Rain 2. And then the cat rolls in like after 5 minutes, it's playtime. You got to come feed me. I'm like, okay, pause, go and do the thing. Come back. Okay. Where was I? Unpause. Oh, crap. I got to go and start making dinner. Pause. Go and do the thing, come back like 2 hours later. Where was I again? The Steam Deck, I think, has a really good crutch for this with the suspend and resume button on it that just allows you to just pause the save or pause the state of the game. You can come back to it later. I mean, obviously you couldn't like switch to a different game, but yeah, I do think that like for a game like this where each individual stage doesn't take longer than maybe like 5 to 10 minutes at the most, having that option to walk away and come back, I feel like I would spend 5 times as much time playing this game overall if I could just like stop and then come back, or like, you know, okay, all right, I've made it through that teleporter sequence. Woo, a lot of stress. I'm good to pause here. Maybe I'll go play some Slay the Spire for a little bit, come back to this the next couple days, and then resume the chaos. Like that, I feel like, is a crucial missing element here. That yeah, I feel like
I don't have kids, but I have many friends who do have kids and also like to play video games, and this is like something that they'll just not buy a game because of that.
Yeah,
because it's like, well, what if my kid needs something? Like, I can't just be like, oh, don't worry, I'll come. Don't worry, you're screaming because you like smashed your head into the corner of a table. Like, don't worry, I'll come. Just like, no,
you need to be able
to pause. You need to be able to come back to it the next day if you want to.
I was actually defend the developer's decision here.
Whoa, and,
unforgivable.
It's not a very strong defense, mind you, but just to play the devil's advocate. Andrew, early on you mentioned the huge swath of things you're collecting, and they all have weird properties. They do weird stuff. And so what happens as you're playing the game is you are kind of loading into your mental RAM like what your build is.
Great point.
And your build is going to be a very nuanced thing. If you put the game down, come back, you know, even a couple days later, you're going to open the game up and be like, what the fuck is happening? I'd rather just start over. And that's how, I mean, and I think, and I feel the same way.
Well, then you will start
bit.
Over yeah, very no, quickly when you die.
Yeah, I feel the same way a little bit with Slay the Spire, because, you know, if you get super far into it, you'll have like 20, 30 relics and you'll have to look at your deck. You'll basically have to spend a few minutes reviewing everything to be like, okay, this is what I'm trying to do. And then you can start playing. That's why it's really meant to be played, in my opinion, in kind of a full playthrough in one sitting. And if you have to pause and stop, like, it's good to have that option, I think, but also I can understand why they're just like, no, you can't, because we think mm-hmm. you're going to hate the game more if you come back into it and you don't know what's happening and then you die quickly. The worst thing you can have happen is you're going to join the game and you just die quickly. We'd just rather have you restart. Maybe.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's reasonable. Reasonably possible. That could have been their mindset for sure.
I feel like you just... If you forget how you were playing your character, then you'll just die, and
you'll deserve to die.
You'll be restarted regardless.
If you just die when you like it, I don't think that's a fun experience. And I think if you're trying to maximize the expected value of fun,
yeah,
you might try to, you know, tweak these principles.
Sure.
But again, I don't have the experiment that where I'm measuring thousands of people and their experiences and their subjective.
You don't have probes into their brains so you can measure instantaneous.
God, if I just
dopamine.
Had that subjective well-being measuring device, I could, oh, that would just be
plotted over time.
Yeah.
For sure. I bet the Lictor ratings would be really great.
Likert.
Damn it. I got to brush up on my nanosauruses and also
my theory.
Statistics. What is it even? This is boring. Sorry, never mind. Anyway, next.
No, statistics is not boring at all. Let's spend the rest of this time talking about.
No,
as we
talk
about statistics,
I mean, as we discussed before, statistics is the phrenology of the math department.
Okay, you know
what? We could get into statistics of our
that's
own.
Fighting words. Hey, did anyone get the skull artifact?
Score. I don't know. There were so many artifacts, I couldn't tell what the hell I had.
It's the one where it's like if you deal extra damage to like if somebody has like four things stacked on them. but that don't matter.
Whoa.
Scott, you've beaten this game.
There's an artifact. Wait, hold on. There's an artifact called Death. When one player dies, everyone dies.
Yeah. You gotta
That's
be on your
delightful.
Toes.
Hi, Karumba. That sounds like one I would joyously accidentally pick up. So, Scott, you've finished this game. Is there a ending cutscene? I'm not necessarily asking you to spoil it per se, but I'm curious if there's any more story content.
Not really. I think like the story content is
more in the items.
It's more of like, yeah, in the item descriptions. The I think when you beat the game with a character, you unlock like that character's kind of specific lore entry in like the lore drop-down thing from the main menu. But yeah, like all the endings, and that's one thing that I think is maybe a little knock on this is that like, well, beating the final boss with one character is the same as beating them with all the characters on every difficulty. I'm 90% sure. I'm 99% sure. Cause the three or four characters that I've beaten the game with all had the exact ending sequence. I mean, it's a fun ending sequence. It's really exciting to do.
Sure.
But yeah, like the cutscene is like you just kind of like flying away Super Metroid style and the moon implodes for all of them.
Gotcha. Oh yeah, you mentioned the imploding moon. But with no moon, how are they going to do a Risk of Rain 3? Oh wait, the dev team's gone. But presumably Gearbox
be raining
has some
moon fragments.
Plan.
You know, I was thinking about this. I wouldn't put it past Gearbox to have some kind of MOBA style versus thing with these character classes involved where like the mobs are like the monsters from the moon, and then you're just PvPing each other with the survivor characters.
Interesting.
I think that would be awful, so that's exactly why Gearbox would do it.
Heyo. Get their asses. I mean, it's okay to like or hate games, and also all devs go to heaven, I guess.
Something like that. I think that's
but not all corporations go to heaven.
That's true.
Fair point.
We want to rate it.
Yeah, I think it's that time. I think it's time to rate our final game.
Judge, season two
of the pod.
Part, the judging.
And in traditional fashion, starting with the lowest ranking first. Will, kick us off.
Just want to get it out of the way. yeah, so this game is 3D Enter the Gungeon, and we all know how bad that game is.
Oh, man. Look at this guy. He couldn't even get through the joke before cracking a smile because he just how ridiculous that statement is.
Yeah, no, I rated Enter the Gungeon a 6, and as such, I rated this game a 6. 6 is, you know, it's not a good score. It's not a good score at all. I don't like these kind of, I don't like the chaos games. I've already mentioned, I just hate the timing and accuracy games. I know we play a lot of Squad, which does have to deal with some of the, that's a social game. So
Squad, you don't have to like actually aim or anything though. That's the thing.
Right, right. Exactly. It's more strategy, right? This is just, yeah, I don't, that's all I have to say. I don't like this stuff. I already mentioned all the things I hate about it. And I don't, I will never, in fact, going forward, I might make it, I don't know. I might just not join for podcast games that have like are a focus on this stuff, because they just really, oh man, I know in the beginning of the podcast we did a lot of bad games, that was the focus, and I got it, and like that was kind of fun, but now I think maybe 2 years into it, whew, I
bad games,
I
like
fun
this
games.
The third most popular roguelike of all time,
I just want to play I you know what, a lot of people are wrong out there, a lot of people like bad things, that's just, that's the way the world is. A lot of people voted the wrong way. A lot of people, okay. Not to make it a political podcast, but you know, there's a lot of idiots out there. You think of the average person, you think about half of people are stupider than that person. You gotta, you know, it, anyways, it's a rant. Six, I rated the 6.
Colin.
Well then,
big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Yeah. all right. So I'll start off with saying I gave the first one a 7.6. I'm giving this one a 7.1. Still liked this game. I still had a good time playing it. I enjoyed the chaos. I enjoyed the running around. But I never quite got in the same style of flow state that I got, and the sense of like detached flow that I got from running around in Risk of Rain 1. I am also bad at shooters in all their forms. So I'll say it in some ways, mad 'cause bad. I'm not good at this game. And that does hurt my level of enjoyment of it somewhat. And like, I'm not quite as beard scratchy as Will, but I do have much more beard to scratch. So, yeah, like I think that it gets a lot right on the aesthetic front. And in a genre that's not necessarily my peak focus of genre, the Dead Cells, I think I like the 2D platformers more, just because it gives you the precision of your controls is a lot higher. I have it in any of the like Elden Ring, whatever those are called, Dark Souls games, where it's just like I am not good at the 3D movement stuff, where it's just like you need to be really good at all that stuff. So I like 2D platformers slightly better. But it's still, man, the music fucking slaps. So that gives it like half a point right there. So, yeah, 7.1. Andrew.
All right. Risk of Rain 2. Is it as good as Stalker 2? Probably not. Is it at all comparable to Stalker 2? Probably not. Does it deserve to be number 3 in all of roguedom on Steam? Possibly. I think this is a pretty darn good game. I like shooters. I like wild synergies. I like a game that I, especially a shooter, that I can jump in and just play and just right from jump start enjoying the game and having, and not just like, you know, mindless destruction, but like interesting, engaging shooting gameplay experiences. I like this game quite a bit. I'm confident I'll continue to play it. And it is coming in at 7.88 as my new number 10. Sorry I had to do it to you, World of Horror. But like at the end of the day, it's like this is just so much more my type of game. Just on average, like just the fun, pure like fun quotient was just higher as I was spending time with this title. I'm surprised that it's number 3. That's like, wow, so high. But like I guess if I had to take a guess pre-episode, I would have said, well, it's got to be at least in the top 10, if not the top 5. So, I guess I was surprised, but in retrospect, I shouldn't have been. Scott, take us home.
Yeah, this is going to be tied for my second highest game for on my rankings at a 9.4, tied with Dead Cells, just a hair above Risk of Rain 1, and just a hair behind my still number one Cogmind. This game, I think, is firing on all cylinders. I think it was a risk for them to move from 2D to 3D, but I think it paid off masterfully. I think this game like really plays very well between all of the different characters that you have. The art style is really good. The music is even better than the first one. It's just such an engaging experience once you get over that hump of like, okay, I actually have 90 minutes right now to burn specifically to play this game and I won't get interrupted. I'm going to jump in and I'm just going to like start slicing things with my ninja blade here. It is super engaging. And I was really happy that that the game was not completely torpedoed forever with the botched DLC and that it was actually able to be playable for the podcast here, because I had a great time playing this. I think like I bounced back and forth between different play styles and originally playing with the Xbox controller and then moving back to mouse and keyboard. Like, oh yeah, this just feels so good to shoot stuff. Just that ending sequence of getting off the moon, even on easy mode, just felt like such a nail-biting, adrenaline-pumping experience. I thought the one co-op session that we did was super fun. Definitely could be convinced to do more of that. And yeah, I think there's just like such an interesting level of depth of skill that you could invest into this with all the different characters and like the community and like trying to see if you can climb that that Eclipse 8 mountain if you really wanted to. But even just for me, like, oh, if I can just like get the mastery achievements for all of the characters, like all of the challenges and like loadouts and things that you can unlock in this game are really interesting and cool and fun. And I think that like, yeah, it just really sets itself apart for some of the other games that I have on this list here. That number three most popular rogue game on Steam, I think it's deserving of where it is currently placed. So 9.4 out of 10 for me. I think a good one to close out the season of the pod with. But before we do that, we have to suggest some other similar games, which I'll do really quick. Our similar games list here, clearly there are ones that are very similar to this game. Risk of Rain 1, obviously. Risk of Rain Returns, I think, play that instead of Risk of Rain 1. I think that does everything that Risk of Rain 1 does, but better, including some interesting challenge modes. Crab Champions has a pause mid-run button. And it's a different vibe for sure. It's a different style of third person, kind of like looty, shooty, run and gun type stuff. But it started as an April Fool's joke, and it's very interesting and fun. Gatekeeper is a game that's like borderline like copyright infringing on Risk of Rain. It's so similar, but it's like a 2.5D top down twin stick shooter, I'm pretty sure. We talked a little bit about Returnal. I think Returnal shares some similar DNA here. It's a lot harder than this game, surprisingly. But definitely worth checking out, Andrew, for sure. Give your GPU a test with that one. Gunfire Reborn, I think, is similar from like the loot and co-op aspect. I'll drop RoboQuest in here as well, just from like shooty gun games. One that no one has heard of, but I think is interesting to drop here for comedic elements. Black Gunner Wukong is a game where you are an ape running around a military base, shooting all sorts of really like cheaply made assets. That just it looks like a really bad game, to be honest, but like one of those like entertainingly bad games. And I think it like goes on sale for like $2 or something. I don't know. Ape Mayhem. There's a game called Vellum, V-E-L-L-U-M. Which, if I remember right, I think this is a game that, if I can spell right, has some kind of similar ideas for like co-op ability, like getting lots of ability synergy type stuff. And then the last one, maybe I'll throw in here as well, called Rabbit and Steel, was a big hit this year. Rogue style game, in the vein of like MMO raids. And there were times where I was playing Risk of Rain 2, where I'm like, am I just doing an MMO raid here? and so I think Rabbit and Steel is maybe more kind of tuning in into that aspect. But those are the similar games. That's gonna do it. That's gonna wind down our second season here of Grog Podding. If you want to send some emails in and brighten our day, grogpodzone@gmail.com is the email for that. Our Mastodon, grogpodagamedev.place, where you can see the pictures of the tree that crashed into my house when we were recording our World of Horror episode. And grogpod.zone is where we have all the rankings and stuff. But yeah, that's season two. Thanks for listening. For this is where I usually like open the floor for plugs and stuff, but I'll plug something myself.
Ooh.
I just finished up a 7-hour tutorial series with the YouTuber Big Simple for going over the Caves of Cud tutorial and first few missions or quests that you do in that game. It was a very good hand-holdy session of like, I don't know what any of these words mean. Please explain it to me. And we just have the first episode of that put up today. And I think the rest of them are getting put out day by day. So I'll link that in the show notes. I think, yeah, my guide, Big Simple, was very good about instructing me on how to do things. Very patient for a game that's so alien, and a for sure stay tuned possibly for next season. We'll see. If the tutorial series does its job and we're able to be like, oh, maybe this isn't as intimidating as we thought it was.
If it sticks. And could we please, when we do do Caves of Cud, let's maybe pick a week where a game I've been waiting for 15 years to come out isn't dropping, when like, you know, there's not like a horrible windstorm, everybody's traveling, family popping in left, right.
Indeed. Yeah, we'll make sure to do it when either the Stalker 2 DLC comes out or when Stalker 3 is released. Be like, yes, this is the perfect time.
Hey, Andrew,
Andrew, quit having fun with that other game. You got to play this other game instead.
Well, thanks for putting up with me, fellas. Yeah, the week that the Stalker 2 DLC drops and Thanksgiving the sequel drops, like we'll be sure to play during whichever next big holiday gathering event takes place. Very cool. Hey, I didn't know about the tutorial series. That's nifty. Look forward to checking it out.
If you can stand another 6 to 7 hours of listening to my voice drone on about nonsense, we'll make sure to link it everywhere and everywhere. And so this is where I usually preview for our next episode. Our next episode is the return of the Omega Bowl. It is our time to revisit the games that have done well in various categories that we have ranked thus far throughout the year. I don't know if I can rattle them off just yet, because I think those numbers might change. But yeah, the idea is more like NFL style playoff nonsense of who won what division for deck builders, shooters, solo devs, etc. And then putting him in a cage fight at the end of the season to see whether or not if Doom RL really was better than Inscription or not. We shall see, but we'll see what our final rankings are over the next week or so. We'll see what the listeners have to say about their ratings for games. And then we will be crowning a champion. Spoiler alert, it's gonna be Returnal, don't even worry about it.
I already know what the winner is gonna be, just looking at the list here.
there's a strong contender this year, that's for sure.
We'll know when we get there. We'll know when we get there. The playoffs, anything can happen in the playoffs. You never know. That's what the playoffs are there for.
Indeed. Sorry to broach the subject right in the middle of an episode. We'll be opening up voting. Is that correct? Like we did last year?
How I did this last year was I had a survey that I sent out in various places, and I was thought like, well, like that's one way to do it, but I also I aggregated averages between like survey results and like listener stats for the various platforms, so like Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and such. And like balance them out that way. It felt a little convoluted, so I might just do the listener voting, like let them vote with their feet, or I guess their ears in this case, or their download buttons, and just have like the voter choice be based on what the most like downloaded or engaged with episodes were.
Gotcha. But we'll be hearing from the listeners in some capacity.
Oh yes. They've sent in numerous right. agreements and disagreements with our previous Omega Bowl thoughts. Which were great. A lot more people agreeing with Will than you would think. So
that's what I'm saying, right?
That's what I was saying. Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, I think we got a good lineup. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. And most importantly, the co-hosts are not being forced to play any more games for the rest of the year. After the Omega Bowl, we'll be having a winter special of me doing a bunch of pre-recorded interviews with developers from PAX this summer that I went to, and I pestered a bunch of people who were showing off roguelike games. I'll be doing that after. So
it's time to go play 150 hours of Factorio.
There you go. You're free. You are free to roam about the cabin now. But yeah, that's season two of the Grog Pod. And to play us out from season two, there's no better way, I guess, for us to commence into the second Omega Bowl than with the Risk of Rain 2 soundtrack that plays during the commencement stage, the final boss stage, the final boss of season two, Risk of Rain 2. Playing us out are some explosive synthy solos just before the moon from Grog Pod season two implodes.